Hi, everybody. Welcome along to another episode of the Dispatches Podcast. My name is Brendan Malone. It is great to be back with you again. And today's topic of conversation, technology, automation, and the human person. Hi, my name is Brendan Malone, and you're listening to the Dispatches, the podcast that strives to cut through all the noise in order to challenge the popular narratives of the day with some good old-fashioned contrarian thinking. You might not always agree, but at least you'll be taking a deeper look at the world around you. Before we jump into today's topic of conversation, just a quick reminder that if you're new here and you're not already a subscriber, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on right now. If you've tuned in a few times and you haven't given us a review, please do that. That all really helps the show. And last but not least, if you want a daily episode of the Dispatches Podcast, that's every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and you want to help support the important independent media venture that is Leftfoot Media, then go to patreon.com/leftfootmedia. The link is in today's show notes, and become a $5 monthly patron. A huge thank you to all of our patrons. It's thanks to you that today's episode is made possible. Alrighty, so today's topic of conversation is about technology, automation, and the human person. And it's a special podcast conversation, actually, that I recorded with a good friend of mine, Jamie Cox. And we were recently together up at his place in the North Island, and we were driving from one location to another. And so I decided to bring along the portable podcasting gear, and we just had a conversation in the car talking about technology and automation and the human person. And I thought it would be interesting to share our conversation as a podcast episode. Incidentally, on the way home from that exact same trip, we also recorded another conversation about the prison system. And so that particular conversation is going to be published as a special podcast episode next week for you to enjoy. In the meantime, here's our conversation about technology, automation, and the human person. Enjoy. Jamie, we're in your awesome weapon of a vehicle.
Yeah, mate, the old Discovery One.
The Land Rover Discovery One.
Discovery One, 1998.
We're on the way to record an episode of Whiskey and Wisdom, but I was thinking the other day about, actually I was driving on this road to your place.
Oh yeah?
And I was thinking about driving, how important driving is.
Yeah, and important as in,
like,
it's a good thing to drive, or important as in,
well, yeah, it is important. It's a good thing to drive. Better than walking, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think the skill of driving is being eroded by technology.
Yeah.
I saw an ad the other day for a car, and the advert was mum in this four-wheel drive thing, busy with the kids, they're all screaming. She gets alongside the parallel park, presses the button, and the car does it all. Parks her in. And I'm like, this is nuts.
Yeah.
Like, these are skills you need. Yes. And I was thinking that, like, this push towards automation, and AI will probably drive a lot of this as well. Vehicles will become self-propelled.
Do you think, though, that some husband invented this tool after his wife has numerously pranked the car and he's sick of paying the excess?
I can neither confirm nor deny such things on a recording.
Okay.
But
now, this is true, because my sons and I have been looking for vehicles recently, because I have one who destroyed his car, and he's older and he's got his full license, and one who's learning.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted them to learn manual, but trying to find a little manual is actually really hard.
Yeah, I wanted Lucy to learn on a manual. Unfortunately, we just couldn't find one.
Yeah, that's sort of tidy and not too expensive. And everything's automatic.
And, like, I think that's a skill. Like, I was trying to explain to Lucy when I was teaching her the basics of driving.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain to her how a transmission works, how clutching works. And I realised there's essential skills and also tools that have been taken away from the driver. So I told the story to my kids the other day. We were driving on the Port Hills around Christchurch. Oh, actually, the other day, just before Christmas. I told them the story about how I was driving a friend's car, and we're driving around the hills, and I was very young, and I didn't quite understand the mechanics of how to drive in the hills properly.
Got it.
So I wasn't gearing down as much as I should. I was treating it almost like an automatic, really.
Yeah.
And I was just using the brakes far too much. And they went soft. We got to the bottom of the hill, roundabout at the bottom, busy roundabout, put the brakes on, they went straight to the floor, and nothing happened.
Oh.
Now, thankfully, I had the good instincts to just
grabbed the handbrake and used that. Came in sort of sideways. Everyone must have thought, what the heck is this clown doing?
Yeah.
Stops at the roundabout almost sideways,
yeah,
instead of pointing straight ahead. But the thing is that...
And so began drift car racing in the Christchurch
Hills. That's right, exactly. But I was trying to explain to them how that, for me, was a really powerful lesson in why you need a manual vehicle around the hills, the advantage of it, and engine braking and everything else.
Yeah.
And when you drive an automatic, you just... Like, you forget those tools. They are there to you. When I drive a lot with our automatic car on the open road,
yep,
I will shift up and down.
Yeah.
And my kids are like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, well, because it actually, there's a whole vehicle relationship that's going on here. It's not just me and the brakes, you know, yeah, or the accelerator.
Yeah.
But that tool's gone. And then with each increasing sort of encroachment of technological self-driving,
yeah,
the driver becomes more and more disconnected from the actual skill and the actual vehicle that they're sitting in.
Yeah, yeah, this is true.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Yeah, I suspect not. And I know you pointed out the book, Why We Drive, but I've only just started reading it. Otherwise, I would be able to... If I'd finished reading it, I could probably...
Oh, Matthew Crawford's book.
Matthew Crawford's
book. Yeah, I saw that on the shelf last night. Yeah.
Which I'm quite fascinated in, but... But yeah, I think there's something about understanding a machine.
Yeah.
I think there's something... There's a freedom there.
Yeah.
There's a... You know, the machine is sort of weirdly... It becomes more of an extension of what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm never going to explain it very well. I need to read the book.
You know your limits though, right, as well, I think. If you're the more connected you are to that tool, that automated tool, whatever it is, like whether it's a chainsaw or a vehicle, you know the limits, right?
Yeah,
and
that's right.
If you, if the thing's doing it for you, you're, I think, what happens when it doesn't quite work like it should, or you get into trouble on a road? Do you know what to do?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because the vehicle's normally controlling everything.
Yeah, that's right. Because I think with, you lose creativity.
Yeah.
And I mean,
in what way? What do you mean?
So when a machine takes over a job,
yeah,
you can have something that's automated, and within that, the machine then just does what you've told it to do.
Yeah.
So if the machine is in a factory line, or a robot, if you like, is in a factory line and it's making a particular product, and that's all it's doing, there's no room then for the genius of the human person to go, oh, we could adjust this slightly, or
yeah,
we could make this better or worse, or do you know what I mean? There's no you've lost creativity. All you get is just a punch, a single, you know, like a stamp every single time.
Like a cog, producing machine. Here's a cog,
but
cog,
it never develops.
Yeah.
The genius of it never goes past just what it was made for. Whereas humans really strive, like, to continue to kind of grow towards God, if you like. And
yeah,
there's something in being
we
creative.
Flourish, right?
And yeah, that's right. And,
yeah, I think, like, flight's an interesting one, because birds can fly and they're pretty good at it,
yeah,
but we're even better than birds are, which is astounding.
Yeah.
What we can do on a plane is just phenomenal. Lift capacity, speeds, all the rest of it. But now we're sort of reversing as the it's like you hit a sort of peak, apex, I think, or a peak,
yeah,
and then your technology starts working against you. So now we're going more and more fly-by-wire,
yeah,
which is less and less pilot involvement. Some airlines are now even starting to do feasibility studies into having a single operator in the cockpit. Like,
right,
it went from three, I think actually might have even been four originally,
yeah,
down to three, down to two, and now they're talking about possibility of one.
Wow.
And even some are considering, could we one day have a machine that flies itself? And I'm thinking, okay, that's great until the fly-by-wire doesn't work like it should. Or you've got a whole lot of pilots who have been trained under fly-by-wire, and they get into a situation where the weather is not doing what it should, or there's some strange crosswind, and you actually need a human intervention at that point, but they're not familiar with those basic mechanical me and nature and this machine sort of skills all working together.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I feel like there's a sort of, it feels like we're progressing, but what we've done is we've increased efficiency, but is that the same thing as progressing? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, it was certainly not. I don't think it is in every case.
No. Oh, and I wonder how much is that strange, well, I think it's a strange balance between having a tool that is just a purpose, like a spade to dig a hole.
Yeah.
But there are also tools that, like a vehicle, that are really enjoyable tools at times, you know, like there's a, the vehicle in particular, because it brings a certain freedom.
Yeah.
You know, like you remember that when you first get your own car.
Yeah.
It's like, where am I going? I'm out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's this...
And you don't care where, right? No, you're like, I'll just drive for hours around the streets.
Somebody told me it was so awesome just to drive to Burger King, so I'm going to drive to Burger King.
Yeah.
3 days later, you're sick of that. But there's a strange freedom.
Yeah.
There's a freedom with the spade, a freedom to dig a hole that you didn't have to do with your fingers.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a kind of like the tool... I think we try to create a tool like a vehicle that is almost, it just makes us dumber rather than really enjoying the tool as well. Like,
that's the problem, that's it, that's the nail on the head. It makes you dumber.
Yeah.
If you as a driver don't need to think about the tool that you are operating, you are not smarter.
No, that's right, you're not, you've lost something. Because you think about some of the old tools, like in carpentry.
Yeah.
Like their plane is like, I've got an electric buzzer, that's fine, but I like the hand planes, and they're not as efficient or not as fast, but sometimes they're actually better. They give a slightly better finish, they've got more control.
Yeah.
And there's something in the joy of using it, a sharp blade, giving me a really nice finish on something that's more manual and less noisy. Something about it's being more, you're more in tune with this, what it is that you're using.
Yeah. Well, I think planing's interesting because you also get a sense. Now, I don't pretend to be the world's greatest DIY carpenter, but you do get a sense, I think, when you're using a plane that's manual, you know with each swipe how close you're getting to that line that you're trying to achieve. Whereas I find when I get my old Black & Decker electric plane around, I'm not quite as connected with what I'm trying to achieve. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
like I have to stop and look a bit more because it's like the machine doesn't really, it doesn't have the same tells. It doesn't give me the same sense of, okay, how close to the grain am I? How close to that line am I? You know?
I think sometimes it's that, I need the electric planer because it's going to plow through the material really quickly.
Yeah.
And I'll be so much happier with it because gets a job done that otherwise would take me hours, and I'm not charging somebody, you know, more than what the job is worth.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like, or in my head, it's like sometimes your daily commute to work can be just as easily done on a train or a bus as on a car, and some ways a train or a bus is an autopilot. You don't have to think. You're completely disconnected.
Yeah.
And you can almost do something else with your time. You can sit on your computer.
Yeah.
And catch up on writing, reading, whatever it is that you want to do. But there are other times
where you need that engagement, right?
Well, the engagement, not only do you need it, but there's something about being engaged that is very human, like actually being aware of what you're doing, you know, entering into the movement. Like it's very therapeutic to, you know, with machinery that sort of much more manual in its process. It's and I think the same with a vehicle. When you're driving, and I haven't driven those hills around Christchurch, but I've heard about them and I know about them. And there's certainly hills from where I grew up in Raglan where you're driving tight corners and pushing hard and you're chopping and changing up and down, and you're engaged with the vehicle. There's something really kind of it's very therapeutic about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there's you, there's the road, there's the machine, there's a completeness, right? A train's an interesting one because you get on a train and you are taken to a destination, and that's great for a train, for a plane, or whatever.
Yeah.
But your whole life shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Like everything you use should not be taking you through life. Your car, your tools. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a profound human connection with, and also I think creation as well.
Yeah.
Like when you create a thing. The question is, a tool becomes so automated, are you doing the creation any longer when you use that tool, or is the tool actually doing it all for you?
Yeah, that's right. You become part of the communist agenda, though.
Well, what if you're like imagine a world in which you're like, you know what? Because I think the next step in that process is, we don't need builders anymore. We've got a full suite of automated tools that we just program, and there's like an AI algorithm that is effectively the new supervisor that just gets on a building site and just runs an algorithm. And right now, here come the plumbing tools.
That's right.
Here come the plastering tools. Here come the finishing tools. And you're like, yeah, is this, something's not right here. Like, there's an analogy that I've heard of, in philosophy that I've heard, like there's something different between a weightlifter, a power lifter in the Olympics versus someone entering a forklift in the powerlifting competition and the forklift cleaning up,
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, sure, lift those weights, but there's something different here that's not the same at all.
No, that's right. Well, there's no discipline. There's no years and years of training. There's nothing. You haven't actually changed anything.
There's no skill.
There's no growth. That's right. You haven't mastered anything.
Yeah.
There's something about mastering a tool. Maybe that's what it is. It's mastering how to drive.
It's
mastering how to use the plane, and we've lost that kind of craftsman.
Yeah, yeah. That very human thing of. And knowing I think it's interesting, you see that in craftsmen who had a real art and a discipline and a skill that was sort of almost multidisciplined, and now in many ways you sort of don't need to be, in a sense. There's a breakdown of all of that sort of artisanship that starts to happen, I think. And like in particular, like where I started, we were talking about vehicles and driving. I think there's something important, like what happens if, like, everything's fully automated and you get in, and I guess every vehicle would be automated, so it's not like you'd say, well, what if the car, you had one day you had to get into a vehicle that wasn't automated, you're driving, you didn't know how. Well, everyone's driving, not that I'm driving, that's self-driving, automated cars. But I guess the point is, what happens if the corporates or the state decides, we want to control people's movements.
Yeah.
So you only get so many travel credits to operate a vehicle.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we're surrendering a lot more, I suspect, than we realise.
Yep.
With that kind of level of automation.
That's right. Yeah, I think, something that just triggered in my brain just then, and then it fell out the other side. No, I've lost it. Oh yeah, I was thinking about how part of the reason I bought this old Discovery.
Yeah.
I like the old vehicles. I like that you keep something on the road for a bit longer.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's what was in the budget as well. I couldn't afford anything newer.
Yeah.
But I really liked the idea that it's, it's an early model vehicle that doesn't have a lot of electronics.
Yeah.
And so, whilst I'm not a mechanic, there are a lot of things I can do to keep this car going. I can fix things, I can replace things, and I can learn about them easily enough.
Yeah.
It's not to say I couldn't learn how to fix a Tesla, but it's a lot harder, and the type of tools that I would need to fix that Tesla. So suddenly
you'd need automation, wouldn't you, to fix the actual car?
Yeah, maybe, but you'd have to...
You'd need a computer.
Yeah, I don't... To read the... A lot of cars do. You plug into a computer.
Here's the first example. Just the other day, friends of ours were staying in Auckland. He's got an Audi, and he's had it for years. And he's starting to have some issues with it, and he took it to the Audi servicing place.
Yeah.
And they plug it in to their machine.
Yes, yep. Tells them everything.
And the machine says... $6,000 to replace these parts.
Yes.
He rings another mate of his who actually has a long standing experience with these particular vehicles and vehicles in general, and he says, okay, that could be true, or maybe if we just replace the battery. Was it $70, $80, whatever it was, replace the battery. Problem solved. Wasn't $6,000 at all. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? There's a whole nother layer of knowledge and... But imagine if your vehicle is such that you can't just connect with it. Like, I remember my first car, well, not the first car, but I bought a 72 Holden Kingswood years ago, HQ. It was a great vehicle.
Yeah.
And I literally
I think I remember having driving that.
Yeah, you did, I think. It was a two-tone, it was a beautiful...
It had a kill switch in it, eh?
Yeah, and I had a Hankook 285s on the back, extracted. It was a beautiful vehicle. That. When I was selling it, I had a for sale sign and I pulled up to the supermarket and this guy next to me and his people mover with his wife and kids leans out and he says, you regret doing that?
Yeah.
And I said, nah, mate, I won't. And I did. I wish I'd kept it. But anyway, I get home and I pull into the driveway, put my foot on the clutch and the clutch goes straight to the floor. I hear this bang and the clutch goes straight to the floor. Those things are an old mechanical arm, not even hydraulic.
Right.
And I get the old buy, sell, and exchange newspaper.
Yep.
$15. Yep. They were notorious. They had a little L bracket. So this mechanical arm went all the way through into the engine bay, and then like an L bracket, and then turned right.
Okay.
Into the selector, I think it was, whatever it was, and or the clutching mechanism. And they were notorious for shearing because a lot of the weight was on there.
Yeah. Okay.
And cost me $15.
Yeah.
And I got into the car. A couple of bolts unscrewed, replaced it, screwed it back up again.
Yeah.
Way I go.
Yep.
Dream on if you think you're going to do anything like that on a vehicle today.
No, that's right. Yeah. And I think there's a loss of something. Like there's times that I don't have the time or even the skill to even work necessarily on this car, but it's not beyond me and I can certainly give it a go.
You could do your brakes.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably do.
And the parts are out there and available and it's kind of, it's within reach.
Yeah.
I think talking to a friend who was in the, actually has moved on from mechanical work, but he was working in the Audi brand.
Yeah.
And he was saying, whether it's going to happen or not, but that they were moving towards essentially a rent system, which is what the world is moving towards, which is a terrible system.
Yeah, you'd never own anything. Yeah.
No, that's right. But basically, you would pay your $90,000 a year to Audi.
Yeah.
And every 3 years, they'd take your car. They would only make their car last three years.
Yeah.
And they'd make it high performance, tuned perfectly, but with that, it's got a three-year life, and they would take it away and fully recycle it, and you'd get your new car.
So pretty much zero servicing probably, wouldn't it?
Zero servicing.
Yeah.
And a new car every 3 years, sure.
And you will be happy. You don't own a thing.
But you don't really own it. That's right. And if you wanted to change brand, you have to switch out completely from this rent system. You don't even have a car to sell, as far as I could work out. I don't quite understand how the system
works. 90 grand's a lot of coin too.
Yeah, I think he was saying about 90 to 120 or something. I can't remember. Maybe it was more, maybe it was less. It was a while ago that I was talking to him. But the idea that you didn't really own the vehicle and the it seemed to me quite a waste.
Yeah.
You know, and these days, like another guy I work with regularly, he's got an Audi, and same thing as what you were saying with the computer, like, they're not interested, the mechanics, once they plug it in, they say, this is wrong and this is wrong.
Yeah.
They're not interested in saying, hey, we'll repair that, or we will, we only need to replace this little part. They'll say, no, we just replace the whole thing.
Yeah.
With our, it has to be the Audi part, but you can't have anything that's not in the same brand line.
Yeah.
But it's quite an extravagant way of, I took my van to my local mechanic, who I love, is an old school third generation mechanic.
Yeah.
And one of the shocks was gone, and he just engineered something up.
Yeah.
He said, his first words were like, oh, they're a pain in the ass, and then I'll do it for $40, we'll engineer something up.
Yeah.
And happy as, and away we went.
Well, that's problem solving, right? And that comes from a genuine, like a craftsmanship and a connection. And when I was in the electronic security industry, I was really, really blessed to actually learn from no skills whatsoever in this space under a guy who had been old school, like MED, electrician, telecom, before it was telecom, you know, worked the phone lines type guy. And he had electronics, electrical expertise.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just he knew red wire, go in red socket,
yeah,
black wire, go in black socket, and then if it doesn't work, oh, what's wrong? He had about 10 different things we could fault check,
right,
to confirm, and all these basic fundamental skills he taught me about problem solving that, okay, so it could be the wire, could be the battery, could be this, could be this, could be this. You know, let's get the voltmeter out, put it on these two spots on the board, the alarm panel board, to see whether there's a cooked resistor. Like, a whole lot of things. And it was really interesting. I learned a whole lot of skills off him, and I would regularly find myself out on site with technicians, quote unquote, who just knew the fundamental basics, and you'd get this panic phone call, you know, 5 p.m. on a Friday night, and the alarm's supposed to be on that weekend. And they're like, it's not working, the product's broken, you know, I need a new keypad. And you get out there and and you just do a bit of basic fault checking that he taught me how to do, and you're like, no, you don't actually, you've actually, I can see you've got a short on the cable here, you've wired this, something's wrong here. Oh yeah, look at this, we traced the run back 5 meters, you put a staple right through it, right, you know, at some point, or whatever it might be. But like, I still remember that, it was just, you know, he I guess he opened up a whole new way of thinking about and understanding your interaction with things in the world, and even the world around you, actually, quite strangely enough, you know.
Yeah, that's
because,
right,
that's a transferable skill, problem solving.
That's right.
It doesn't have to be an electronic security panel that's not working. It could be anything. And you say, okay, let's figure out a process to find out exactly where the fault lies.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think by having something that you can work on and get to know,
yeah,
you remove a lot of the fear.
Yeah.
Instead of being, and also the slavery, like, there's the fear of like, oh, I don't even know what that is, and it doesn't work.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
opposed
yeah.
to like, oh no, I've done some maintenance, I understand what that wobble is.
That's, yeah, I plugged it in, yeah, I put in my USB cable, it's supposed to go.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Now what? But then you can also be held to ransom, you know? You don't know.
Yeah.
And so this is why, like, you know, these larger companies can go, yeah, that's a $6,000 part, because yeah, you don't know.
And you can't fault check what you don't know, right?
That's right, you can't say, actually, I could have just fixed that for $150.
Yeah. You could imagine if my friend had shelled out $6,000 or said, oh, that's not worth it, I'm going to have to sell this car. You wouldn't get $6,000 for that Audi.
Yeah.
And you certainly wouldn't get it in a state where it needed a $6,000 repair. But the whole time there's a lie at the heart. Imagine you're trying to sell it to someone, you're like, look, I'm sorry, it needs $6,000 worth of repairs. I'll sell it for $1,000 or something. If you're lucky, you'd probably get that.
Yeah.
Even then, you probably wouldn't. You'd almost have to give it away. But imagine that you said, oh, $100. The person said, okay, I'm going to have to spend $6,000. And they said, I'll just try and swap the battery out. You would be robbed of income that was rightfully yours in that situation, right, you know? Or vice versa, the person goes and spends $6,000 they don't need to.
Yeah.
Someone's getting robbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the end, like, for me, it's there's something in it that's joyful. Like, there's something that's, you know, like, being able, there's a real satisfaction. I can't do everything on a car, for sure, but there's a satisfaction in being able to do a little bit of diagnosing and a little bit of repair work.
Yeah.
You know, there's a prudent, you know, frugality there. I don't have to throw away a lot of money.
Yeah.
All the time, but there's the... But greater than all of that is just the joy of being able to drive a vehicle or to use a tool and to understand what it is that I'm using it and to really kind of connect with it.
Well, again, when you use that vehicle, the less automation that it has, the more you are the one who is actually...
disconnected.
Well, yeah, you know what's going on, you're aware. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting watching. We were in Sydney recently. A lot of Teslas over there for some reason, but I ran into a lot of Teslas. I guess there's a bit of money over there. And we had this incident. We're driving down, it's called a highway, but it's not really. It's like a 2 or 3 lane thing in places. And it's really sort of through city type suburbs, you know, and so the lanes are a bit narrow. But they're not uber narrow.
Mm.
This person who's driving a Tesla, the vehicle, and I don't know if you've been in a Tesla.
No.
But they've got like it's bigger than an iPad, right, sitting there on the dash. And it tells you exactly as you're driving along where the other vehicles are in relation to you, and it gives you little warnings if it thinks you're too close.
Yeah.
So I could see this person was too far out to the right-hand side because clearly they're looking at their little Tesla dash and it's telling them, you know, go that way. And then we just passed them in our lane, nothing dodgy going on, you know, just driving past them, and they freaked out. And they got an angry horn from this person, because their vehicle had obviously warned them, too close on the other side, and they weren't driving properly, basically, yeah, because this machine had made them too dependent on a system,
yeah,
rather than the actual craft of driving. And one thing I noticed when I was in a Tesla was that it actually makes you more anxious, because it's telling you on the dashboard everything that's going on around you outside of the vehicle, and you don't really need to know that. I just don't need to know everything that's happening with every other vehicle around me. Like, literally a vehicle that I will pass, and within a second or even less, they're gone.
Yeah.
And this thing's telling me where it is. It's like, well, I don't need to know that.
Yeah.
So I just don't. You know? It's just a distraction.
Yeah. It does make you wonder why, you know, I think I wouldn't be able to pinpoint the talk that I listened to, but I do recall someone saying, you know, the maths around, you know, most people spend an average of, you know, whatever it is, commuting.
Yeah.
Half an hour, sometimes longer, depending on the city. You know, that's time that could be spent stuck on a screen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, by automating your vehicle.
Yeah.
They now have, it's because it's sellable time.
Yeah. The worst of both worlds.
Yeah. you can now get back on the screen.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, yeah, it's interesting.
So you're stuck in traffic, but your time is now consumed by yet another
thing.
Distraction.
Yeah, that's right. Which probably you think is a freedom. You go, oh, I'm stuck in traffic, I can, you know, watch the latest whatever.
Yeah.
But you're really not.
No, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
Your brain's, like, it's, what's happening is you don't have interior contemplation in that moment, right? You're not stopping and thinking about the world or even reflecting or contemplating on anything, let alone higher things.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because it would be almost dystopian, wouldn't it? Where you could have jobs where they say, like, imagine a future world, everything's fully automated, your vehicles are fully automated. So it's like, hey, you can own your own car, and it's just like being on a train, you know, so you still have that quote-unquote freedom of having your own vehicle, so you don't have to go to the train station, you just get in the train and it drives you where you want to go.
Yeah.
But the good news is, you know, you can now sign on with this company, and they'll contract you to begin your working day in the vehicle, you know what I mean?
But
I guarantee you that company wouldn't say, oh, well, that means you can leave work an hour earlier because you do half-hour commute home and a half-hour commute too, and they'd just say, that's more time for us.
That's right, yeah. That becomes a bonus. I have heard the argument that in some ways vehicles have destroyed civilization.
Yeah.
In that, and I'm not going to do the argument justice, but in that small towns and villages are destroyed because we can get out and go to another place for work. It before was impossible to do.
Yeah.
You know, you can live, you know, an hour away and you know, this idea of commuting, but it's destroyed local communities to a degree.
Yeah.
We're no longer bound to the people around us. We can go wherever we want. And there's a freedom in that, but there's also kind of a loss of something because it's the same, you know, we don't have to go to the church that's 2 minutes down the road. It has all of our neighbours in it because we're a little bit pissed off with the priest in the front.
Yeah.
But we can drive another 15 minutes and get to the next church. But we have nothing to do with that congregation except to turn up on Sunday. So.
It's kind of, you're right. It's a weird thing when you think about it too in context. Like, you work an hour away, for example, where you live.
Yeah, that's right. When traditionally the better thing is that the family were their own economy.
Yeah.
You know, that the husband and wife worked together in the business of the family, which is to work on the land,
Well, that's it. The family was an economic unit prior to the Industrial Revolution, where we took the dads out of the home. Yeah. And so when people talk about the trad wife, this is a big thing at the moment, you know, oh, you're a trad wife, and, you know, that's how you fight the system. I'm like, no, that's actually not what a trad family was.
No, yeah.
A trad family was the whole family involved in an economic endeavour, and they would work, I think we might have been talking about this recently, you would work till the work was done.
I think Mary Harrington speaks really well.
Yeah, she does. And Paul Kingsnorth is another one. There's a few of the others who've talked about this.
Yeah.
You'd work till the work was done. There was a lot more holy days. There was a peasant wouldn't constantly be labouring away for the Lord. That's the sort of a myth that we have.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, there's a whole fascinating dynamic. The Protestant work ethic actually wasn't as helpful as some might imagine it to be.
Yeah.
Because it then sort of, it made work a source of worth.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it became an obsession eventually. Once the religiosity of culture dies away, all you're left with is my value is in my work. The whole concept of the traditional family is not
broken.
Dad out at work and mum at home.
No,
like Book of Proverbs, actually.
Oh.
What does the woman do? She makes things and then she sells them at the gates.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good wife. She's involved in economic trade.
Yeah, that's right.
But we've got the opposite of that, right? We've got people pushing back with trad wives against a system that says just everyone should be working for a corporation. Everyone in the family must work for the corporation, earning minimum amounts of money.
Yeah, that's right.
To buy increasingly unaffordable houses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, you think about the car and you think, you know, it brings a freedom, but at the same time it destroys something.
Well, and when it becomes automated too, it's like, imagine a world in which your corporate boss says, I need your work at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're like, but yeah, I normally start at 7. Yeah, but I need you at 6, and I've programmed your vehicle to get you on the road at 5:30.
Yeah.
And I know by your GPS tracking whether you'll be in your vehicle or not, and if you're not in the car on time, you're getting docked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And every corporate's doing that. Yeah. The liberal fantasy of choice totally collapses at that point. Oh, you don't like it, just get another job. But they're all doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which our freedoms have been, you know, like a lot of cars are GPS now, eh? It's, and businesses do, some businesses use that as a protection thing, and some businesses use that as a way to essentially spy on what their
employees are doing. There is a certain, I think there's a certain, it's interesting to me, following a vehicle, that like a service vehicle or something like that, says I am GPS tracked, so I cannot speed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm actually okay with that kind of a thing. In some ways that forces a company to stop demanding absurdly dangerous levels of efficiency from an employee.
Do you think then, to extrapolate that one out, should all cars have a GPS tracker that a police scanner can just go bling, this is last week's average daily average?
Yeah.
And we can tell that over the last 3 weeks, it's like a black box that sits in your car.
Yeah.
He's gone over the speed limit 9 times.
I'd say no.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because I think that would be a complete waste of police resources and time.
Well, they don't have to do it. In fact, it's less. They don't even have to get on the road.
No.
You just go through, past the speed camera, it reads your number plate and goes and sends a report through, and then they just send you a little a warning or a or deduct your bank account.
Okay,
or,
so second problem I can see is potentially a glitch in the machine, a gremlin in the machine that's giving false readings, and you get pinged, and you can't. How do you dispute it? It's like, nah, sorry, mate, the machine doesn't lie.
Yeah.
So, and imagine the costly investment of trying to dispute something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas
GPS though is pretty accurate these days.
No, but what if the machine's not reading you right? Do you know what I mean? It's just not somewhere in the process.
Yeah.
It's clocking you too early at a thing or too late or whatever, and it thinks you're speeding. You know, and then all of a sudden the burden of proof has changed. Previous, at the moment, the cops have to prove like if you challenge something, they have to prove their machine's not faulty.
Yeah.
But the burden of proof would shift.
Yeah.
So then the other, but there's a bigger problem I see. That's sort of a incidental in some ways.
Yeah.
The bigger problem.
But a business is all right to do that?
Well, yeah, because then it would force, I think there's an advantage to the actual employee. Because then the business couldn't say to you, we told you to be at that job on time and you weren't. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah. you'd have to speed to be on time. It puts the employee at risk to do that. Whereas if they're tracking speed, they can't force you into an Uber efficiency. Yeah. But the other problem, of course, too, is there's a moral, like from the Christian moral perspective, like, okay, a speed limit is actually just an arbitrary imposition. Mm. Like, okay, the speed limit's 100, but that's an arbitrary imposition. A safe vehicle and a safe driver could do 110. What like is there a moral problem with that? Or you have to speed to save a life? You know what I mean? Like there's no moral issue there. Whereas the machine treats it like a moral absolute, and I don't think it is.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Safe driving is the absolute, yeah. Not speed.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, 180 is not safe, but yeah, I mean, 110 versus 95?
Yeah, but that's right. As the machine only sees 110, but it didn't see the fact that you were carrying I can't even think of a good example why you'd speed, but doesn't see the...
Trying to get your wife to the hospital.
Maybe, yeah, something like that.
Trying to get to a job where an employee's alone in a rural area and you think they might be in danger, you're trying to get there because you think they may have had an accident.
Yeah.
And on that note, we've arrived at our destination, so that's the end of this conversation. So the moral of the story, I guess, is what? Don't buy fully automated cars.
Yeah, buy the old cars, if you can.
A vehicle that you are connected with in a meaningful way.
Yeah, try to find a manual car.
Yeah.
Try to find something that you can do some repairs on.
Yeah.
Something that also, I think it's good stewardship too, actually. Yeah. I'm not a big climate change guy, but the stewardship thing makes sense to me. They keep the car going. Yeah.
Here's one advantage I can think of just to finish with. It might actually allow people with serious disabilities a lot more freedom. A self-driving vehicle. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
That could mean that they can actually go places.
Yeah. And I think maybe in tight cities where the driving isn't the freedom of driving, but the commute between blocks.
Yeah.
I can see that the transport. But I mean, you've got buses and trains, but...
You might be able to save a lot of money too if your vehicle was so efficient.
Yeah, I think... There's potentially a space for it, but not for every, not everywhere. Nah. It shouldn't be the.
Be connected with the machines that you operate, and your human flourishing will be better. Don't be a cog in the machine's process. Yeah. On that note, live by goodness, truth, and beauty, not by lies. And we'll see you next time on the Dispatches.
The Dispatches podcast is a production of Left Foot Media. If you enjoyed this show, then please help us to ensure that more of this great content keeps getting made by becoming a patron of our work at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. Link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Dispatches.